from deep inside your radio.
Hey everybody, let's visit Nutty Coincidence Farm, where amazing happenstances really do grow on trees. Dateline Australia. The Australian government knew there were doubts about intelligence on Iraq's nuclear program, but still used it to justify going to war, according to a former intelligence official. Andrew Wilkie says doubts about Saddam Hussein's nuclear weapons program had been made clear to the Australian government after advice was received from the United States. Wilkie was an analyst with the Office of National Assessment before he resigned in March in protest at the government's stance on Iraq. He cited claims Iraq had tried to buy uranium from the African nation of Niger. The claims were found to be false when the U.S. sent a former diplomat, Joseph Wilson, to investigate in early 2002. Prime Minister John Howard, in a speech to Parliament in February, repeated the claims as part of his justification for sending troops to Iraq. Mr. Wilkie said this week he found it quite extraordinary that Howard and Foreign Minister Alexander Downer were still denying they had been aware of the doubts. Same thing happened in Australia as here. Man, that could only grow on Nutty Coincidence Farm. Hello, welcome to the show.
Sleeping on a planter at the Port Authority, waiting for my bus to come. Seven scotch and sodas at the office party, now I don't remember where I'm from. I think I had a black wallet in my back pocket with a bus ticket and a picture of my baby inside. And if I make it home alive, I'm gonna get my shit together. 'Cause I can't live like this forever. I know I've come too far and I don't wanna fail. I got a new computer and a bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. Sales, yeah, 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 yeah. Heading for the airport on a misty morning, gonna catch a flight to Baltimore. Try to kill an hour with the whiskey sour, if there's time I might have just one more. I gotta do some quick reading for the big meeting, but my head is spinning and I can't quite open my eyes. As long as I don't have to drive, I'm gonna get my shit together. 'Cause I can't live like this forever. You know I've come too far and I don't wanna fail. I got a new computer and a bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. A bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. A bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. Bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. I'm staring at the screen, pretending like I know what all these little flashing lights mean. Oh yeah. I gotta do some quick reading for the big meeting, but my head is spinning. Gotta get my shit together. 'Cause I can't live like this forever. You know I've come too far and I don't wanna fail. I got a new computer and a bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. A bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. A bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. A bright future in sales, yeah, yeah.
only shows that you're blind. And when you know it's all over and you're going insane, well, I'm just there to remind you that I can't feel no pain. Why don't you let it be? Surround, sister, take care of me. Sister, take care of me. Surround, sister, 'cause I'm
place. There's 110, 110, 110 in the shade.
Oh yes, it's mighty, mighty hard.
Going way down, mama, won't you carry me? It's 110, 110 in the shade. Going way down, mama, won't you carry me?
Well, according to Dusty Baker, according to Dusty Baker, manager of the Chicago Cubs, black folks and Hispanics are better suited to the heat. And he didn't get fired, so things are great. Things are swell. Things are great. Hello, I'm Harry Shearer from the Edge of America, from the home of the homeless, in receipt of a letter from David in Princeton, New Jersey. Let's hope this is the answer, because I'm tired of asking. Abu Mazen, the Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas, a.k.a. Abu Mazen, as he's known. And everybody said Abu is the Arab honorific for father of eldest son. And I said, all right, why him of all the Arabs in the news? In the case of Mahmoud Abbas, the use of the name Abu Mazen goes back not to referring to his oldest son's name, but to the nom de guerre, or alias that Mr. Abbas used in his years as a Palestinian revolutionary and co-founder of the Fatah movement, along with Yasser Arafat. Arafat, who did not have children at the time, took the name Abu Ammar, which translates as father of the struggle. So there it is. It's a nom de guerre. And, of course, guerre is hell. Ladies and gentlemen, a little show business news never hurt anybody. Music fans who illegally download their favorite tracks from the internet still buy albums in stores, according to research. Well, now the record industry is absolutely dead. Research, ladies and gentlemen. The findings explode music industry fear. This is from the Scotsman newspaper that fears that such internet file sharing is killing the record industry. The results suggest most music fans still like to own genuine copies of their favorite albums. Patrick Johnson, a music business analyst, said, quote, far from damaging the music industry, downloading music from the internet can be a useful and significant marketing tool, unquote. Music research and programming industry research experts who surveyed 500 serial downloaders aged between 13 and 45 discovered 87% of them who try before they buy would still buy albums when they're commercially released. Only half of the people who download music from the internet believe they're doing something morally wrong. They lack moral clarity. That's the deal. And they buy records. So aside from that, the record industry is absolutely on the mark. A former advisor to efforts by the U.S. and Britain to set up a post-war media network in Iraq says there's a high degree of political control exerted over broadcasts by coalition authorities. Stephen Claypole revealed to the Guardian newspaper this week that the Iraqi media network was originally intended to be run by a former director of the Voice of America, Bob Riley, giving it what he describes as a degree of independence. However, amid Washington concerns that Jay Garner, the former head of the Iraqi reconstruction, was not relating to the Iraqi people, the Iraqi media network was kept firmly under U.S. government control. In the latest issue of television, the Journal of the Royal Television Society, Claypole wrote, it was the stuff of dreams for the White House and No. 10 Downing Street, direct control over the content of the evening news. Yeah, well, that helped. That helped a whole lot. Filmmaker Shelton Lee, better known to you as Spike, has dropped his lawsuit against Viacom because, quote, on reviewing the circumstances surrounding its efforts to rename cable network TNN as Spike, I no longer believe that Viacom deliberately intended to trade on my name when naming Spike TV, said Shelton. He says, I was pleased to be able to resolve this matter and be able to work with Viacom on new projects, his statement concluded. That's right. That was the settlement. He gets to work on new projects for Viacom. I'm suing him. People call me Spike, don't they? I've heard that. I've walked by and I thought they were murmuring Spike. News of Clear Channel, ladies and gentlemen, the largest company in the radio business, a former Greenville radio personality says she was fired for opposing the U.S. invasion of Iraq, according to a lawsuit filed this week. Roxanne Cordonnier, who went by the name Roxanne Walker on the air at WMYI-FM in Greenville, alleges she was belittled, reprimanded, and ultimately fired for disagreeing with her co-hosts on the Love and Hudson show. WMYI, its parent company Clear Channel, the company's regional vice president and general manager and the station program director are all named as defendants in the suit. The suit alleges that co-hosts Harriet Clarkson Mungo III, a.k.a. Bill Love, that's a radio change, ladies and gentlemen. That's not a nom de guerre. That's a nom de radio. Harriet, H-E-R-R-I-O-T-T, Clarkson Mungo III, changed his name to Bill Love. And Hayden Hudson, also known as Howard Hudson, encouraged Cordonnier to join their pro-war discussions regarding the invasion of Iraq. The conversations became contentious on several occasions. Management's tolerance for opinion decreased as war drew closer, the suit alleges. The suit also alleges that Love and Hudson belittled her both on and off the air because of her political beliefs. I went through hell, she said. And hell is war. No, hell is radio. By the way, also news of Clear Channel, local public radio station here in Southern California, KUSC-FM, announced a partnership with Clear Channel for Clear Channel to try to get more underwriting announcements, commercials for KUSC. So, camel's nose under tent, loitering with under tent. And from New York, great news for all of us who think that this should have happened. After pondering the idea seriously for a decade, ABC News, pondering it for a decade, first of all, guy is actually sitting around thinking for a decade, should I or should I not? Peter Jennings this week announced he'd become an American citizen. Actually, the ceremony took place a little earlier. It's been on my mind for many years. Obviously, I've been here such a long time, Jennings said. As a Canadian friend said to me today, I have always made clear my love for America, and it was a good time to formally declare that affection, along with a sense and a debt of gratitude to the country that's made it possible for me to have a wonderful life, both professionally and personally. Jennings will retain his Canadian citizenship. That's how grateful he is. That does not mean that you have to renounce your roots, he said. But most of them have to renounce their citizenship, don't you? Isn't this a special deal? Yes, it is. I'm not gonna push this. The broadcaster's Pledge of Allegiance came during a regular citizenship ceremony at a government office in Lower Manhattan May 30th, but he initially kept it a secret. I cried a little bit, says Jennings. My kids didn't cry, but I cried a bit. But I'm a fairly emotional character anyway. Among other things, you have to take a test. I'm very proud. I got 100. I just finished a book on America with a friend of mine, meaning writing it, not reading it, so. In Search of America. It was, Jennings said, while traveling to write and promote the book, that he decided to apply for citizenship. So, ladies and gentlemen, he got 100 on the test, which means next time the House of Representatives defeats a constitutional amendment to ban flag burning, we won't hear this.
Well, I think I'm going to start with a flag amendment, right?
Yeah.
Give me the type page. I'll just ad lib it, I think, is the answer. How long have I got?
Coming up to a minute left of this.
This is what I have so far.
No, take it out. Take it all out altogether, Kathy. Just take it out. I'm going to start with the flag.
So what would you like the prompt to be at?
The House of Representatives has voted against a constitutional amendment. Against what a constitution? Against?
Here. 20 seconds.
Against what?
A constitutional amendment?
No. Yeah, there's another phrase in there.
That's okay. Your son, I'm Prophet Peter. We'll have a final
report. Take that. Yeah. Hang on.
7 seconds. Okay.
We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay, so you're going
to My question is, does the House come up to pass the amendment? Are they voting on the amendment? Doesn't the amendment have to go all through the states and everything before?
Once the House rejects it.
Yeah, but hold it. The question is, would the House have to pass the amendment? Is that what it's passed the amendment,
yes.
Right?
First the House would have to vote to pass the amendment. Then it would go to the Senate. Then it would go to the states.
For ratification.
That's right. But since the
okay.
House didn't, Foley says it's dead if you won't okay. bring it up.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And congratulations on the 100, Pete. We're all busting our buttons. Quote, this is another story now, ladies and gentlemen. A whole other kettle of something. Quote, the Jews, I find, are very, very selfish. Unquote. That's President Harry S. Truman writing in a 1947 diary that was recently discovered on the shelves of the Truman Library in Independence, Missouri, and released this week by the National Archives. Written sporadically during a turbulent year of Truman's presidency, the diary contains about 5,500 words on topics ranging from the death of his mother to comic banter with a British aristocrat. Oh, man, fly on the wall time, huh? But the most surprising comments were Truman's remarks on Jews, written on July 31st, 1947, after the president had had a conversation with the former Treasury Secretary, Henry Morgenthau, gentleman of the Jewish persuasion. Morgenthau called to talk about a Jewish ship in Palestine, possibly the Exodus, the legendary ship carrying 4,500 Jewish refugees who were refused entry into Palestine by the British. He'd no business whatever to call me, Truman wrote. The Jews have no sense of proportion, nor do they have any judgment on world affairs. Henry brought 1,000 Jews to New York on a supposedly temporary basis, and they stayed. Truman then went into a rant. The Jews, I find, are very, very selfish. They care not how many Estonians, Latvians, Finns, Poles, Yugoslavs, or Greeks get murdered or mistreated as displaced persons, as long as the Jews get special treatment. Yet when they have power, physical, financial, or political, neither Hitler nor Stalin has anything on them for cruelty or mistreatment to the underdog. Put an underdog on top, and it makes no difference whether his name is Russian, Jewish, Negro, management, labor, Mormon, Baptist. He goes haywire. I've found very, very few who remember their past condition when prosperity comes. Unquote. He was on his meds that night. Man. Truman's comments were, according to Sarah Bloomfield, director of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, typical of a sort of cultural anti-Semitism that was common at that time in all parts of American society. Says John Lewis Gaddis, a professor of history at Yale, Truman was often critical, sometimes hypercritical, of Jews in his diary entries and in his correspondences, but this doesn't make him an anti-Semite. Anyone who played the role he did in creating the State of Israel can hardly be regarded in that way, unquote John Lewis Gaddis. Other thoughts, of course, are available thanks to a newly released audio tape of Nixon in heaven.
All right, what else?
You saw the Sapphire column?
Yeah. I saw the what?
Bill Sapphire's column?
Yeah, sure.
In the Times.
Yep. Still in the Times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know, but how the hell am I supposed to read the Times, you know, up here? I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, I get it faxed to my cloud.
Yeah. Well, then, mister, I get it faxed to my cloud. Maybe you can explain why.
Well, you still have the Do Not Disturb Until 3000 sign on yours.
Yeah, well, I know, but I mean, a newspaper, for God's sake. Oh. I mean, for Pete's sake. Jesus. I mean, jeepers, this political correctness thing up here is driving me nuts.
Well, I did tell you, I got word from some people here that just get the swearing tone down, you know. And yes, delivering a fax qualifies as a disturbance. Some people here really don't want to keep up anymore.
Yeah, well, sure, they're sheep wherever you go. We all know that.
Yeah.
Cripes. You could never win an election if everybody read the GD paper, you know. So
we'll get the sign taken off this.
So what did Sapphire say?
Oh, no, it was just he'd had an imaginary conversation with you.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And the dateline was purgatory. He said you were still doing time in purgatory for wage and price controls.
Yeah, he did. Huh? Mm-hmm. Well, it figures.
Oh,
know.
Yeah.
Sapphire talked a good game.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, he wrote a good game.
Oh, but, yeah.
I always thought he underestimated the old man. You know, he didn't think I had enough juice to...
No, I think he was just trying to be amusing to the East Coast elites.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, well, you know, sure, there's that. Mm-hmm. And of course, how's he to know there is no such place, you know,
yeah.
from his...
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And, but, you know, talk about pandering to the East Coast WASP elite.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sapphire's a Jew.
Mm.
Jews don't have purgatory.
They don't?
No. Trust me on this, Holman.
No. I
know a little something about our Jewish friends. They do not. Speaking of which, by the way, let's get Truman over here. Yeah? I think it's time we buried the hatchet.
Mm. You know, some stuff from his diaries just
see?
Got...
See, now that I get. I mean, you know, there's something screwy with the...
Yeah.
I guess you wouldn't call it the infrastructure here.
No, that's true.
Anyway, see if Truman's available.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have tried before. From what I get back, I still think he's got a Nixon problem.
From what you get back from him?
From his people.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
They think if it came out that he'd gone soft on old man Nixon, you know, might kick a little sand in the gears of Truman's sainthood machine.
Yeah. A, how's it going to come out? But I'm not sure it's actually...
Hold a minute. I mean, you know, these people leak up here.
No,
you know,
I...
You do know that.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
You know, in all the years I've known you, dead and alive, never thought of you as naive.
Thank you, sir. All right, but
you get the Times facts, Dave. You tell me. Has anybody gone after Truman, you know, for his remarks about our Jewish friends?
No, not really.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the liberal contingent is really more focused at on the war thing at this point in time.
Yeah, well, there you go, then. You see, that's my point in triplicate.
Yeah.
Liberals are giving Truman a pass. You see?
Yeah.
But Nixon, who started all this environment crap and put in wage and price controls and basically did more for the damn liberals than their beloved Bill Clinton ever thought of doing.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Now, if Nixon hated the Jews, you know, there must be something wrong with him.
Yeah.
That's the old liberal line. And, of course, they have every right to...
Don't think Truman hated them. You know, in the diaries, he said he mistrusted them.
Yeah. That's what you say in your damn diary. That's not what you tell Bess when you're engaging in pillow intimacy type activity.
No,
of course it isn't. But, you know, if Truman wants to be so high and mighty around here, let him, you know. Of course, that's his right, you know.
Yeah, nothing we can do.
I mean, if he wants to while away eternity thinking that conversations with Dean Acheson are as deep and as insightful as he gets, you know, I mean...
Yeah, that's his problem.
That's right.
It's his loss.
Yep.
Also, you're not hearing his voice on the diary, so...
I'm not doing what now?
No, his quotes about Jews, you're not hearing him say them.
No, well, of course not. He burned the tapes.
Really?
Well, you know, figure of speech. I mean, they didn't have tapes then.
No, I was going to say.
But old man Truman had a very souped-up recording apparatus in the White House. Don't be under any... Don't think he didn't, you know. Hidden microphones, lathes to engrave or whatever onto phonograph recordings, you know.
LPs?
I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway, all destroyed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm sure the East Coast elites would dismiss all that as, you know...
Yeah, so much paranoia.
That's right. That's right.
Sure. But I mean, they said that about people who said the Johnson tape.
Oh, sure. That's right.
And that we tape.
That's right. But you see, it's not just the liberals.
Mm.
That's the thing.
That's the thing right there. Well, I'm not sure. I don't think I read anything
well,
about
see,
it.
Well, see, Alderman, one of the great things about being up here is, I may not get my New York Times via fax, but cable is free.
Yeah.
See? So, of course, it's Zan Coulter. She's all over the damn tube. Standing up for Joe McCarthy.
Well, good for her. It's about
standing up for Hoover.
Yeah, that's right. I did.
But you see, even she, and of course, she goes to a good East Coast school and she's got the hair and the legs.
Although that not together.
No, but
the hair isn't on the legs.
No, that's right. Yeah. No, it's not. But even she, she didn't have the guts to stand up for RN.
For the old man, yeah.
Nope.
No.
No revisionist history for me.
Yeah. Comes with the territory.
Yep. Mm. Man in the arena never gets a break.
Nope.
Even when he's not the only one who distrusts the Jews.
Especially when...
Yep. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Okay, well, screw Truman.
Mm-hmm.
And screw Sapphire. And as for Miss Coulter.
Mm-hmm. Well, screw her, too.
Nope.
Mm. Nope.
Well, no, you see, because that's what she wants.
Mm. Yeah.
All right, let's go get some cottage cheese.
This is Le Show, ladies and gentlemen. Now I'll read the trades for you. This is from Current, the trade publication of Public Broadcasting, from a column called Output, Revamped Station Breaks, Add Viewers for Promos. I will read it for you. It will be so red. Techniques designed to keep viewers watching PBS during lengthy primetime breaks tested on Monday nights last fall, roll out nationally in September. They're showing enough promise to get a tryout on Tuesdays as well. PBS tested its reinvented breaks for six consecutive Mondays, found that they kept some 1 million antique roadshow viewers tuned in for an extra 7 minutes. But the audience still fell off sharply in the 9 p.m. start of Ken Burns America, Ken Burns American Stories, a collection of repeats drawn from Ken Burns' extensive library. The experiment was not a home run, but a ground hit to third base, says Judy Diaz, Senior Director of Brand Management and Promotion at PBS. That's right. Viewers surfed away, she surmised, because there's less affinity between the back-to-back Monday shows, Antique Roadshow and Ken Burns. The active ingredient in the revised breaks is Roadshow Treasures, a 2-minute glimpse of favorite moments from past episodes in the middle of the pledge break. While the revised break didn't boost Burns' audience, retaining the larger roadshow audience for 7 minutes, quotes, gives additional exposure to our messages, says Diaz. It's still important to retain them for our promo spots and our image spots. Our breaks are more effective, and that's a good thing. By using similar sticky break techniques on Tuesday night, Diaz hopes to lead Nova's audience into PBS's 9 p.m. show, Scientific American Frontiers. In its push to redesign promotion breaks, PBS is following the lead of commercial networks, which developed techniques such as hot switching, leaping from one program directly into the next to keep viewers from surfing away. Prior to the PBS break test, public TV audiences typically dropped 55% during a break, and sometimes as much as 70%. Stations that used the revised breaks last fall retained 30% more viewers during the break. The primetime Monday breaks that go national this September will be different from the ones PBS did tested last year. The network will offer optional NPR news updates the station can use as they choose, though it recommends that they air the news in the last 30 seconds before the start of the next show. Station breaks, which ran as two separate one-minute elements in the fall test, will be consolidated into one break of more than 3 minutes in length, depending on whether the station carries the news breaks. Producing stations will have no more than 15 seconds to insert their production credits, website promos, and program-related offers, such as mugs or video cassettes. PBS may opt to replace the embedded Next On promotion with a promo for another show if the upcoming show has limited, quote, flow potential with its lead-in. Yes, you are the you in public broadcasting. But who are they? A question that occurs to one when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Thanks so much.
Smiles at me, hey, I
Ladies and gentlemen, the story of the Iraq War, what got us, what it left us with, and what got us into it, escalated dramatically this week. Maybe it's worthwhile just looking at the way the story moved. It started on Monday when, while President Bush was beginning his African trip, the White House released a statement saying that the claim that Iraq was trying to buy uranium from Niger, the African country of Niger, actually, that claim, which had been referred to in the president's State of the Union speech, that claim was based on bogus intelligence. This had been known since March, at least, when the International Atomic Energy Agency said after its investigation that the intelligence was bogus. And Seymour Hersh reported that in The New Yorker, but it took the White House until this past Monday. Then, on Tuesday, the CIA warned the U.S. government that claims about Iraq's nuclear ambitions were not true months before President Bush used them in his speech, according to the BBC. Doubts about that Niger story were aired 10 months before Bush included the allegation in the State of the Union. The CIA told the BBC. CIA is talking to the BBC, ladies and gentlemen. They don't call me. Then on Wednesday, the U.S. military captured an Iraqi intelligence officer who may have met in Prague, with a key al-Qaeda hijacker 5 months before September 11th. The military captured the intelligence officer, some name here, last week in Iraq. Czech authorities had said in the wake of 9/11 that he'd met in Prague with Mohammed Atta. The FBI and CIA later determined there was no evidence that Atta left the United States and traveled to or from the Czech Republic. Czech authorities, who had said, told the Bush administration they believed the two had met in Prague to plot the bombing of the Prague offices of Radio Free Europe, not to plot the 9/11 bombing, it subsequently reported they were no longer certain of the meeting. That was inconclusive. On Thursday, a former U.S. intelligence official who served under the Bush administration in the buildup to the Iraq War accused the White House of lying about the threat posed by Saddam Hussein. Gregory Thielman served as director of the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence until his retirement in September. He had access to the classified reports. He said, "I believe the Bush administration did not provide an accurate picture to the American people of the military threat posed by Iraq." He conceded part of the problem lay with U.S. intelligence, but added most of it lies with the way senior officials misused the information they were provided. Tillman said a fierce debate inside the White House about the purpose of the aluminum tubes bought by Baghdad had been cloaked in ambiguity. Tillman said there was no significant pattern of cooperation between Iraq and al-Qaeda. "This information," he said, "has had a faith-based intelligence attitude. We know the answers. Give us the intelligence." And on Friday, the CIA tried unsuccessfully in early September of last year to persuade the British government to drop from an official intelligence paper a reference to the Niger story. This was according to senior Bush administration officials in Washington the day before George Tenet took the blame. "We consulted about the paper and recommended against using that material," a senior administration official familiar with the intelligence program said. The British government rejected the U.S. suggestion, saying it had separate intelligence unavailable to the United States. So the CIA takes the blame for now, and maybe it occasions a phone call. Next here on the show.
Hello. You sound plenty relaxed.
Hey, 43. Been doing nothing for the last month but fishing, playing golf, and tickling Bar's feet.
You're like the elephants over here, you know. You've told me more than I need to know.
Point is, very relaxed. Until read in the paper this morning. Hey, how are you? Where are you?
On the plane back from Nigeria.
Mm.
Let me tell you something, 41. I've been doing some thinking about these African countries. I mean,
yeah.
They got Nigeria.
Yeah.
They got Niger. And then they turn around and say that we're the ones who are, quote, hung up on something. You know,
Listen, just know what Lee Atwater once said. You know a Republican president is in trouble when he schedules a trip to Africa. Democrats got to go there. Yeah. That's constituent service.
Yeah.
Now, that footage of you in Uganda with all those flies buzzing around you.
Hey, the kids' choir was sweet. And you know, 41, sometimes you do things for no better reason than that God tells you to. God told me that America is called to its responsibilities when brother countries are being savaged by a pandemic. So we got a mission, and I learned a word.
Now, did God also tell you to issue the statement admitting the Niger story was a phony just when your trip was starting to get some traction?
No, sir. Carl told me that. Yeah. And looky here, burying something that way works great 99.9 out of 10 of the time. You know, in this case, what we were burying buried us. It happens. You know, you think you've covered up a dormant volcano with a protective coating of lava, and all of a sudden, hello, volcano turns the tables around back at you.
Yeah, and did the selfsame deity tell you to end up pointing your collective finger at the company?
The CIA? You still can't say its full name after all this time?
Not can't. Won't. You know, the company is a pretty special place, and just think, it's a sad day in America when the DCI has to be the fall guy for a war.
Well, 41, it's not like we had a lot of choices. You know, Cheney's fingerprints were all over this, so were Condi's. Colin, of course, he made real sure his skirts were clean.
Colin's a good man. Never saw him once not wearing pants.
Look, it was blame the CIA or blame the EPA, and although that would have, you know, appealed to our base, it just didn't seem to have the necessary gravity.
Now listen here, Sprout. The company is kind of unique among government agencies.
Yeah.
Since most of its work product is secret, all it's really got to go on is its reputation.
Hey, sir. George Tenet agreed to take the blame. You know, if the batter agrees to be hit by the pitch, you can't blame the pitcher. Especially when the batter was appointed by Clinton.
Now, 43, don't go there and don't do that. The company is bigger than any single president. I think they've proven that. And look, you're going to run some more preemptive wars.
Not before next November, but
sometime you're going to need the company to provide you with the intel to make your case. Better intel next time, maybe.
Yeah.
But still, you know, Don Rumsfeld's little shop of intel horrors isn't going to do it for you. So, yeah, George Tenet fell on his sword. But maybe you got an agency full of people who think he didn't fall on his sword. He was pushed.
Yeah. You know, I still can't get over just the damn coincidence of it all. I go to Africa to get away from all this stuff. I'm answering effing questions all week about Niger. I didn't even go to Niger, you know? I mean, probably would have been nicer than Botswana, but
Look, 43, here's the deal. You don't need to blame the company. Look at your advantages. First, I know that you don't like to model yourself after your dad.
Hey, greatest of respect.
Whatever, but take a page from the book of Ronald Reagan. Iran-Contra chapter, out of the loop. Hands-off management style. All you need to say.
Cheney?
Out of the loop.
Condi?
Out of the loop.
Yeah, but wait a minute.
No, that's the beauty part. There is no loop.
You should have seen these Ugandan kids dance. You know, they move their whole bodies.
And when they start asking why you read a State of the Union address without being able to vouch for what was in it,
yeah,
you simply tell them, God told you to read it.
Not bad. Mm-hmm. Let me think on it, 41, but maybe you got something there. You know, maybe one sword is enough for old George Tenet.
Mm.
Hey, give my love to Mom.
Tickling her toes, right?
Take care.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Oh, man. Whole world. When you're in love, the whole world is sorry, I guess. The former executive director of the Virginia Republican Party was sentenced this week to 3 years of probation and fined $5,000 for illegally intercepting a Democratic Party conference call. Edmund A. Mattricardi III apologized before Judge James R. Spencer, Federal District Court in Richmond, Virginia, for illegally eavesdropping on two calls among the state's top Democrats. "I stand before you a humbled man," he said. One of Germany's most visible Jewish leaders, Michael Friedman, has resigned from his official post and agreed to pay a fine after being found in possession of cocaine. Friedman, who's best known as the aggressive, acerbic host of a popular television talk show. Hey, just like Mike Savage. Savage. Oh, it says popular. Sorry. Appeared in public for the first time since the scandal erupted to offer an abject apology. "I'm sorry and ask that you give me a second chance," he said at a crowded news conference. "I ask all of you to keep in mind that this incident was not my whole life, that this is not the whole Michael Friedman." Changing his name. An Italian minister under fire for calling Germans loud, hyper-nationalistic blondes and arrogant beer guzzlers apologized late this week, telling the country's top-selling newspaper, quote, "I love Germany." Stefano Stefani, a junior minister responsible for tourism, also said in a statement, he never actually intended to disparage Germans. "I'm sorry," he said. "I love Germany. If my words caused a misunderstanding for many Germans, I would like to say here that I am very sorry." He added that Germans are always welcome in Italy and that they're exemplary neighbors and reliable friends. He was only trying to defend Italy against those who'd attacked it. A Swedish political leader apologized this week for remarks that German Foreign Minister Joschka Fischer was a terrorist. Maud Olofsson also stressed she didn't share the views of a British activist who compared the European Monetary Union to the Third Reich. "I have apologized for having said that. It was a mistake. If I'd wanted to discredit Fischer, I would have done that when he was here." That's ballsy. Pittsburgh Pirate first baseman Randall Simon, charged with hitting a woman dressed as a sausage during a game against the Brewers in Milwaukee. The Pirates issued an apology for the incident. Simon swung a bat at the Italian sausage character. There was four sausages racing around the infield. That's entertainment, ladies and gentlemen. That would be good for a PBS pledge break. A sausage race? The director of the Ohio State Teachers Retirement System publicly apologized for making insensitive remarks to retirees. Herb Dyer regrets comments he made to retirees who were worried they would not be able to afford steep increases in health insurance costs. He acknowledged he told retirees to go out to eat less often and go on fewer vacations. Four River Rouge, Michigan firemen were suspended for apparently allowing two women to pose for pictures inside the firehouse. Captain William Vroman and two other firefighters all received suspensions. Vroman apparently met the two women at a gas station across the street from the River Rouge firehouse. Says Chief David Cirillo, "I apologize to all the citizens in River Rouge. I'm sorry that took place with members in my department. And I'll do everything in my power to assure that things like this do not happen in the future." Well, Michael Savage apologized. The outrageous talk show host who was fired from MSNBC for telling a caller to get AIDS and die said he was reacting to a crank caller. "I meant to insult him personally, not all people with AIDS," says Savage. "They didn't have to make a comment on which anyway injured me," Savage said of MSNBC's statement. "They put the leper bells around me. I'm dead in the water on television." He's the former Michael Weiner, a one-time herbalist and nutritionist. He said he thought he was off the air when he made the comments. That got him in trouble. The designer of the massive frame that toppled on a crowd of dignitaries, including Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor at the National Constitution Center's July 4th opening, accepted responsibility for not ensuring the structure was properly bolted to the stage. Q We Get It, the company hired by the center to design the scenery for the opening, said in a statement it greatly regrets its involvement in the unfortunate incident and apologizes for any embarrassment to the center and the city. And Catholic bishops in the Philippines apologized to their flock for actual or alleged sexual misconduct of some of its shepherds, and for cases of fiscal mismanagement by certain priests. And finally, Miami-Dade County Mayor Alex Pinellas said he will apologize at next week's NAACP National Convention in Miami Beach for the county's snubbing of Nelson Mandela 13 years ago, which triggered a costly tourism boycott. Now that's an apology you know they mean. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature. Ladies and gentlemen, you got to hand it to the Democrats. They finally found their voice this week on the issue of the war, so it was reported in many media. Because Don Rumsfeld testified that the war is going to cost $4 million a month in its aftermath, not $2 billion as was originally estimated. That got the Democrats mad. That gave them their voice. This was a fine, fine situation. It's perfectly worth $2 billion a month. It's just, it's overcharging to ask $4 billion for it. Democrats' basic issue, value. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same, not values, at the same time over these same stations, NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz across North America on Sirius Satellite Radio, and around the world via the internet at www.harryshearer.com or kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Harry Truman destroying his tapes, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.